As we've heard already this evening, China's decision to ban beef exports from four Australian abattoirs has many concerned about a trade war between the two countries. As a response to the Prime Minister's demand for an independent investigation into the COVID-19 outbreak. But I want to change our lens and take a look at the race relations within the country. Asian Australians are reporting an increase in racially motivated abuse as the fallout from this virus continues to hit across Australia. A short time ago, I was joined by Race Discrimination Commissioner Chin Tan. I began by asking him if there had been an increase in race complaints since last time he was on the show, when he told me that one third of complaints to the Commissioner were related to COVID-19.
The figures that we've had from February, March up to April, on the average indicating the number of cases we have, there was an increase substantial in February, March, April. We've seen it tapering back to what is the average on the hindsight though. And we're talking about 32% of cases that we've received that are COVID-19 related.
Does the Commission's data tell the whole story, or is there more of this kind of racial abuse happening in the community that you feel like perhaps isn't being captured?
Well, definitely not. Patricia, what the Commission does is a statutory body that has got a very defined role in capturing complaints of a certain type, and they are of civil nature. They don't capture the criminal aspects of any abuses or racial matters. So it has a limited capacity to pick up the overall picture of what's happening out in the community in terms of racial abuses. I want to make it very clear that while we make the figures available, they are part of a big picture of what's happening out in the community.
Do we know if there's different kind of incidents going on face to face? Obviously, people have been largely staying home versus what's happening online.
Well, I think the different layers in terms of racist incidents, we're talking from one end, criminal activities, and the Queensland Police, for example, have said they've got 22 cases on the books in terms of charges laid for what is known as racially motivated cases. And on the other hand, of course, we got these service provision cases where people might have experience of discrimination based on the fact that they're not getting enough services or the wrong kind of services because of race issues. So there's a whole spectrum of different form of racism that's been experienced by people. And it could be a case of someone experiencing an abuse by someone who is just passing me by or without the capacity to be able to identify the culprits. And so there's a whole range of capacity for complaints to come through.
There's criticism that it's just too difficult to make a complaint to the Commission. What's your response to that critique? Should it be made easier for people?
I don't believe it's difficult. The complaint process is pretty straightforward. It's written complaint mechanism. The issue would be about the sort of complaints that people may have. Some people may just want to record incident which they experienced, but it is a formalized process. It's a process that deals with conciliation and mediation. So there are limitations, obviously, about where you can take that. And if it's obviously an issue that relates to violence or a crime of a nature that's a criminal in nature, and obviously you take it to police. So we have a very clear defined role in the way we deal with complaints. And within that margin, obviously, some people might find that it's the necessary capacity or avenue for which they can lodge the complaint.
So, Commissioner, what role do the police have? You mentioned the Queensland Police and, yep, and the cases they're dealing with. Has the Commission looked at what all the police forces are doing and the kind of numbers they're dealing with and how they're recording this racially motivated crime?
The difficulty, Patricia, about data is the fact that there isn't a national body that captures all the information that we're talking about, and the scope of the information that we're dealing with in terms of data from one hand, service provision, to the police-based criminal activities. We want to obviously get to a position where we are able to advocate for capacities in that particular area. With the Queensland Police, for example, we've written to all the chief commissioners asking for details and information. And within different jurisdictions, there are different ways in which it's been carried out. And some states, the police have a far better system in trying to capture as much of the information as possible. In some places, there isn't enough of that information coming through. So there's a whole range of ad hoc capacity to try and capture an area for which we believe there should be a national centralized body that can cater for that particular need.
Okay, so you're arguing for a national kind of way of calculating where we're at with this racial abuse. Why do you want that? I mean, like, explain to me how you want to use that kind of data.
Well, number one, we have a race discrimination body that's charged with responsibility on race-based matters. So obviously, and the state counterparts have equally a deep commitment to this whole process, is how do we know and how do we measure and map racism if we don't have data to support that? So number one, the facts are terribly important, data to support what we're doing, knowing what's out there. And secondly, it helps us to be able to dispel any myth or misinformation that might be roaming out there in terms of what racism is the occurrences out there. And thirdly, it helps with the policy making. It will give us capacity to understand how we can frame a policy to deal with race issues. And fourthly, it gives capacity for victims to find some support and assurance that what they have to say is counted, it's been taken seriously and into consideration. So these are very important aspects of why we need more data and very reliable data for that.
We're seeing escalating trade tensions between Australia and China with the banning of some Australian beef and a looming tariff war really over barley as well. Of course, this is like a trade argument, but there are broader tensions between the two countries that are well documented, as you know. Are you worried that those tensions between Australia and China will see Australia's Chinese community caught in the middle? Is there any evidence for that?
Patricia, I'm going to leave commentaries about our relationship with our Asian or near neighbours.
Sure, it's not really that. That's not the question. It's more about the impact that's having on the community.
I think where we focus on is within Australia and dealing with the issues that we're facing in terms of race and protection of people against any increased or otherwise of racist activities. And it's providing that framework that's terribly important. It doesn't matter, and there will be ebbs and flow in terms of the relationship we have with our neighbors and in different countries. And what we need to do is to ensure that there is resilience in our capacity to deal with our internal capacity to live with the social cohesion and inclusion that we value. And this is where our focus is saying, how do we build our resilience within ourselves? That no matter what happens with our relationship externally, we're able to keep and cherish and maintain those values that we feel is important for us.
You're saying that that should happen at that level. I wonder if I can get your reflections on the way that coronavirus has been handled, particularly for information and medical health advice for marginalised communities and different language groups. Do you think enough work has been put into providing that kind of help for communities from non-English speaking backgrounds?
I think if you look at the initiatives that has been occurring in the last few months, we've seen information in 64 languages, for example, that caters for COVID-19 information that goes out to different communities. And recently, I think as of last week, there have been 64 languages that has gone out to communities about how to, in fact, deal with racist complaints. So by and large, I think we've gone a long way in supporting communities. Yes, more can be done. And I think when we look at the needs and we're getting messages coming through from communities saying more is needed in particular area, and it doesn't have to be based on race-based matters. It could be about needs of communities because of cultural and language issues. And we're trying to meet those needs by advocating for capacities to be able to deal with those, to government having a focus on how they can support communities.
When I last spoke to you, you said that you thought there needed to be a campaign around all of this. Mm. Have you had any success in convincing the government that it needs to be more focused around these issues?
I think we're getting some traction, and the communication level with government has been pretty good. I'm just a bit disappointed the fact that the budget has been pushed back to October. So we won't know what the outcome might be in terms of outstanding advocacy for a campaign, because it is a campaign not just about COVID-19, the campaign that we need to have to address issues about how we educate our communities about race issues.
Commissioner, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me
again.
Thank you.
That's Chin Tan, the Race Discrimination Commissioner. This is RN Drive.